You are now tuned into the Truth Frequency.
We are TFR. TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
So styles tends to not only separate men, you know, because they have their own doctrines, and then the doctrine became the gospel truth, you know, that you cannot change, you know. And, but if you do not have style, you just say, well, here I am, you know, as a human being. How can I express myself totally and completely?
I think our society is run by insane people. For insane objects, objectives. If anybody can put on paper what our government and the American government, etc., and the Russian, Chinese, what they are actually trying to do, you know, and how what they think they're doing, I'd be very pleased to know what they think they're doing. I think they're all insane. You know, but I'm liable to be put away as insane for expressing that. You know, that's what's insane about it.
Evil contains within it the seeds of its own destruction. Watch that experience. Watch what happens to a person that becomes, who's evil and ruthless and negative. Just observe it. And you'll notice that this is in fact the case. And it's certainly the case of the fractal. Evil contains within it the seed of its own destruction. The moment that you take that kind of anti-human negative stance, you're just waving a red flag that nature will come and get you. Which is exactly what's happening now. It's called the age of revealing and the age of awakening.
And welcome, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, welcome one and all to another fascinating edition, Truth Warrior. And I'm David Whitehead, that's my name, and I'm your host. And we're broadcasting live from truthfrequencyradio.com. And I'm excited to be here talking about one of my favorite subjects, and bringing out some questions and some concepts and some ideas that honestly, they really get my mind working. And it's very, very, very interesting. The journey we're going to be going on this evening, ladies and gentlemen. And I have none other than the lovely Linda Moulton Howe joining me. I'm just waiting for her to connect to the show. And when she's on, I'm going to bring her on board. But while we're waiting for her to call in, I just want to make a couple announcements. I had been speaking for quite some time over the last couple weeks, months, about this fascinating, epic journey that I had the honor and privilege to go on across Canada with my good friends, and met some new friends along the way. And we went to 12 major cities, and it was called the Modern Knowledge Tour. And we really honestly didn't know where it was going to go, how successful it was going to be, if there was really an interest here in Canada for this kind of information. And we found out that the answer to that was a resounding yes. People do want to know, oddly enough, about the other side of the story, about all the information that they're not really getting from mainstream sources. So that's what I dedicate my work to, is to those maverick scholars, those people that go in those areas that most researchers, journalists, scientists, and all in all, supporters of the mainstream status quo, they're afraid to go there. And so it's important that we go down those roads and that we have a conduit. We have a way of getting that kind of information out there. And so what I wanted to do with my partner, Chris, is both him and I were working on this tour. It came out of just a conversation or a couple conversations back and forth where we wanted to bring this information and the researchers that we felt were good at communicating this information to the Canadian public. And of course, it ended up getting online, and we got all kinds of amazing, incredible support from people literally all over the world that were interested in this. And we had some amazing, amazing turnouts across this country, which was awesome. The crowds were diverse. We had so many different types of people that were in attendance, young, old, all kinds of walks of life, all kinds of backgrounds. In Toronto, we actually flew in Linda Moultonhouse. She came in and visited us here in Toronto. And she was here. She did a fantastic presentation followed up by an even more mind-blowing workshop. And I must say, for anybody out there that hasn't checked into Linda's work in quite some time, I've got to say that after watching her presentation, I did a lot of research on her before. I've interviewed her before. She's been in pretty much every documentary on the subject of, you know, are we alone in the universe? Are there such things as UFOs? What are these things? What's happening to the different livestock in farmers' fields that are being surgically mutilated and all kinds of anomalous things going on there? That's kind of how she got started way, way, way back. And she's been involved in this forever. And we thought, hey, let's bring her down. And I think, honestly, she's one of the most underestimated out there. And I think it's because maybe either people didn't pay attention to begin with, or they haven't kept up with her work, or maybe because she's been in so many mainstream television shows where they edit a lot of what she would really tell them. So she has to be obviously giving sort of a generalized version of her work. But when you really sit with her and you really listen to her and you talk to her and you research what she's got some absolutely incredible information to share. And she's very professional. She's very easy to work with, tremendous woman. And it was awesome to have her there in Toronto. So that's kind of tying in tonight's show. But the announcement I wanted to make was that Modern Knowledge is now officially going to become something bigger. And it's with the support of many people. Many people are getting involved, and it's happening in Canada. And we're looking at doing some more events. We're bringing some other exciting speakers, so it's sort of manifested into that. We are also doing an online, we have a website put together, which you can now access. It's modernknowledge.ca. And we're going to slowly be adding and uploading all of the content that we got on the tour. We got, oh my goodness, I must have over 60 hours of footage, unique footage, interviews, commentary, conversations, campfire discussions, event footage, workshop footage, behind the scenes, talking to the audience type footage. So we've got all kinds of amazing stuff, and we're going to start unloading that and unveiling that through the website. And we're going to also be collecting this information, collecting this data that we're going to be gaining from some of the other tours and events and interviews and things that we're going to be engaging with. So it's really exciting. I'm honored to be a part of it. And I really hope that if you're listening to this show, that you go and check out the website. I put together a video. It's about 8-9 minutes long. And it was a dedication to the Modern Knowledge crew, because I want to say right off the top that without every single person that was involved with this venture, involved and working and helping and assisting and doing all that, the work that needed to be done, it took over 9 months to plan, you know, doing 12 events across Canada. And without them and without all the speakers and contributors, we wouldn't be able to do this. So as a team, we're going to be trying to make this a better platform. We're going to turn it into a multimedia hub for Canadians here. And of course, you can tune in from anywhere around the world. You can check out what we're doing. And we've got an exciting event or series of events that we are working on developing right now. We're in talks about some other projects that I'll be announcing as they get confirmed. But so far, we are good to go. We are working with Michael Tessarian. I've had him on the show numerous times. I speak very highly of him. I have a great deal of respect for him as a researcher in this field. And for the first time, he is going to be coming to Canada. And he's going to be doing some live events. He's going to be discussing the origins of what we call and what is known as the Illuminati, and what the origins of the, you know, these secret societies and occult orders are all about, how they are linked in with higher forces that we're going to be getting into possibly as well on tonight's show. And also there is some what Michael would call the female Illuminati side, where of course there's a lot of documentation of a lot of these kings, princes, rulers, the male side of what's been going on, the masculine side of this oppressive assault upon human freedom throughout history right up to the present day. And then there's also the feminine side, which a lot of times is not really looked at because of the fact that it seems we've been in a state of imbalance, and it seems like the masculine side is very dominant. But there is a sort of, there's another side to this coin, and it's a huge subject. Each event will probably be a good 7 or 8 hours long. Michael's going to be doing some, bringing out some really, really groundbreaking information, very cutting edge. He feels that this will be one of his best presentations. It'll summarize everything, sort of summarize, I should say, everything he's done, and will definitely shed some light on the powers that should not be and why they're there, how they got there, and what we can do about it. He's also going to be talking about a lot of solutions as well. So anyways, that's the announcement. And I do see that we have Linda on the line here, and I'm just going to test out the connection to make sure that we have her. She needs no introduction to Truth Warrior. She's been on here before, and it is my honor to host her again on Truth Warrior. So let's see if we can connect with her. Linda, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, David, and I sometimes wonder who keeps trying to interfere with some of us trying to get together, because your numbers had a busy signal on the first one for about 5 minutes, and then I got through.
Really? Oh, interesting. I wonder, and you were just trying to call now, eh? That's weird.
Well, I started at 8,
yeah,
and it was a busy signal, and then I tried again a couple of minutes later, and it was a busy signal, and then I tried your cell, and it was on voicemail, and I tried an email, and then I went back to the first number, and then the man's voice was on there to give extension 2. But for some reason, it was busy in the first 2 tries, and I thought, I wonder if something's trying to keep us from doing this program.
You never know, Linda. Well, we're glad you finally are able to get in. Maybe there's been a confusion with the connections there. Not sure what happened, but you're here. You're coming through loud and clear, and I'm so happy to be able to talk with you once again. So welcome back.
Well, thank you, and congratulations on all of the efforts that you all did for the modern tour across Canada. It was, without doubt, I'm sure, just an overwhelming task. And I know that in Toronto, I loved the audience. There was, after one of my presentations, I think there were 40 people who stuck with me till like 1 a.m. in the morning asking questions. And I found that to be extraordinary, because they were asking intelligent questions. These were people who were aware and wanting to know more, and I think that's what needs to be happening.
Oh, for sure. And Linda, I gotta say, wow, that's pretty cool that they stuck around with you later on. We unfortunately had to kick everybody out. We were in the Ontario Science Center downtown Toronto, and it was, all the security are there, and they're like, okay, we got to wrap this up, because Linda was literally surrounded by these people having an awesome conversation, and I had to be the guy. I'm like, guys, I'm really sorry. I know, you know, but we have to leave. So I'm glad they were able to at least talk with you a little bit more afterwards. That's great.
Oh, yeah, and I love the people for their curiosity and for their caring, and that is something that I think you and Chris have set a new bar on, trying at least to get people to think beyond the 6 o'clock news.
Oh, well, we appreciate that, Linda. You know, coming from you, it's a huge compliment. I've always been a fan of your work, and I thought it was just amazing that I used to be the one just watching you on documentaries, watching you do talks, you know, books and articles and everything else. And then now I had the opportunity to host you in my hometown, and it was awesome. And I thoroughly enjoyed your presentation and your workshop. And I just thought it was great that you were able to be a part of the tour. So that was awesome.
Well, thank you. And there is so much going on in this world. And when you realize that I'm getting across my desk through my computer every day now stories that range from large animal mutilations to small animal mutilations to the continuing booms and metallic sounds to strange lights that people are seeing now, it seems, in both hemispheres constantly. Some of the crop formations that appeared this summer, not really so much in England as in France, in Italy, in Holland, in other places that you don't associate. They were extraordinary. There are people in science and math who have been trying to analyze them, and there seems to be a common theme in the crop formations this year having to do with perhaps astronomical relationships and timelines, making everyone wonder what, and jumping to another subject that is constantly coming in now, people who appear to be in the human abduction syndrome, and they are having vivid dreams, they are agitated, they have a sense that something is coming that relates to non-humans, this planet, to the evolution on this planet, even if they can't clearly articulate it. And a very interesting sub-theme in that, because there's so many subjects, and I'm happy to talk with you about any and all of them, is that some of the people in the abduction syndrome in the last few months have said that they feel a tremendous positive feeling about what could be coming, versus others for a long time have felt that it was going to be negative. And when you get that kind of a contradiction, to me, it's, you stand back, we're in a planet of chaos now on the, we'll call it the military front, happening in so many parts of the world, even in the United States now in Missouri, and that there is a human agitation that is coming out in conflict and violence and disease such as Ebola and the sixth mass extinction. I'm working on a story at Earth Files, a big one about the sixth mass extinction. And some days you get the sense that there is a negative energy, that it's all going downhill. Mm. And then you end up, myself, becoming inspired by people who have had interactions with something in the non-human category, and they are insisting, no, what is coming is going to be an effort to try to rebalance the planet at every level. And I think that at least we all need to hang on to the possibility that we're not on a planet that is headed toward destruction, and we're not on a planet in which everything will become extinct. That, in fact, that half glass full and empty is a good way to look at the current situation. In an interview that I did this past week with a scientist at Woods Hole Institute in Massachusetts, it's one of the premier in the entire planet when it comes to marine sciences. And we were talking about the whole issues of so many marine animals, as well as land animals, air animals, that are being added each year to the list of extinctions, largely caused by fossil fuels and pollutions and pesticides that humanity is adding to the planet. And he said something to me that I'm going to try to stress in the report that I do at Earth Files and Coast and Dreamland, and I will share tonight. He said, the truth is that as we run computer models going forward, because I was asking for the rest of the century, which would be about 85 years, where do things look like they will be at the end of 85 years if the increase in CO2 kept going at exactly the rate it is and so forth? And he said, when we run the models, we see that we lose certain species of fish. We are definitely going to lose all or most of the coral reefs, which does not sound like that would even be a planet we'd want to live on. But he said, for every degree of warmth and for every decline in species, others come in and replace. It means that the planet will be different, life will be different, but that the planet and life on Earth will continue. And I sometimes think that we lock into this, the way we want things to be are the way we grew up if we loved life. And everything is change, and we are on a planet that is changing inexorably. And maybe, David, in the modern tour, I know these issues came up with the wonderful audience people who stayed for so long to talk. It was without knowledge. The average citizen is weakened in all of this. If governments and parents and authority figures conclude that none of us are wise enough or grown up enough to take harsh facts and deal with them without becoming depressed, then let there be policies of denial so everybody just continues going 9 to 5 and everything is happy until something bad happens. I think it's the reverse. I think it should be that we all be educated about everything that's happening, the sixth mass extinction, what can we do, CO2, extraterrestrials. We're on a planet of great change. It always has been a planet of great change. And that if we had more education, not less, if we had more awareness, all of us that are in democratic nations, or we are supposed to be in democratic nations, we might actually be able to help more. And that, I felt, was one of the themes in your modern tour, and I know that it is one of the themes that I feel that as a reporter that I have got to keep looking at all sides of these subjects, that everything is not doom and gloom or happy and joyful. Yeah. It is a mixture of both of those, and we need to grow up on this planet to be able to face all of it.
Oh, well said, Linda. And I would say that the way I've been feeling the same way, where, you know, I look at some pretty dark information sometimes, and sometimes you look at it and you think, oh my goodness, are we capable of surviving this? And then I do something like the tour and I go across Canada, which Canada has been sort of, you know, they've been pointed out as being one of the most apathetic countries because we have it so good here in so many ways. Although increasingly we are being turned into almost like another state of the United States in a lot of ways. But, you know, it's encouraging for me to go across Canada and see so many people. We had so many incredible interactions with people who were very awake, very aware, very passionate, not fearful, not stuck in fear, but aware of what's really going on and passionate about trying to find some answers, some solutions, doing some research, contacting networks of people, working together on sustainable communities. I mean, even Eliza Knockwood, she was the native elder that we had with us on the tour. She's currently building an earth ship out of pure, you know, it's like tires and wood and just, you know, materials that would be recyclable. And they're building an amazing house for a whole, you know, couple families of people. It's amazing. And to see people come together on those little things, it gives me hope. And I think that, yeah, we are in chaotic times. And this is a time when, you know, we're going to be on a process of transitioning and hope. We all hope. I got my fingers crossed here. We hope that it's going to be positive. I believe that it's going to be positive. I choose to be positive about it every single day. But like you said, Linda, it's also important to balance that out with being aware of the true nature of the issues that we face, right?
Right. And there is a question about compassion for life, and it has come up in one of the, I would say, more disturbing subjects that you cross when you get into the issues of humans interacting with this planet, and that is hybrids and clones. Mm. And it has been only this year of 2014 that more than one whistleblower's information has come my way that suddenly has opened up something to me that I had not considered before. And I will just try to give some bullet points and then talk about it a little bit more in detail. In 1940s, when Truman was president, the current information is that Truman and company discovered that underground in places like Dulce, New Mexico, and an area in California, that there already were underground extraterrestrial hybrids and clones, and that the estimation was that they had been occupying territories in this planet perhaps for thousands of years. Therefore, they would be considered the property owners of all the underground facilities, and that it would present the United States government with a huge problem. They either had to tell the world and suffer the consequences at the end of World War II, or They choose a policy of denial while they try to figure out what they are, why they're here, what they want, what can the government do to buy time. And the current, I would say it's more than a hypothesis. It's coming from people who have literally been in some of these hybridization programs who are now talking for the first time. And they say that the hybrids have been being made by the Ebens especially. And this is a point to stop and try to define for your audience. In documents in the United States going back to World War II, at first there were discussions of small gray-skinned types and talls. Later on, it became more and more refined that there were gray beings that had heads and faces the shape of a pear, and that they made, cloned, hybridized, what we might call androids, biological robots, but more sophisticated, programmed to do work for the pear-shaped ones, and that those androids or biological clones and hybrids could be a variety of shapes, a variety of heights, have a variety of eyes, nose, ears, or lack of. They could be all kinds.
Sorry to cut you off there, Linda. I'm on the edge of my seat here, but we are going to our first break. So ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be talking more about this subject on the other side. So stay put. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Truth Warrior, ladies and gentlemen. We are here with another segment with Linda Moulton Howe. We've been discussing already, right out of the gate, we've been getting into some pretty big subjects, and I just want to let people know that if you are new to these subjects or new to Linda's work, you really need to go and check out her information online. There's all kinds of content available, and you definitely need to obviously stay tuned to the rest of this show. And getting into this subject, you really need to open up your mind and understand the situation that we are in as a planet and realize that, of course, we've gone through this evolution of ideas regarding the nature of where we reside. And that is that, of course, we used to think the world was flat, and if you walked far enough or took a ship far enough, you would just fly right off the edge of the earth, drop off the edge of the earth. And then, of course, we used to think that the earth was the center of the universe. Of course, we were the center. We were probably considered the biggest, you know, place to live, the best place to live. And then throughout that entire time, of course, we're assuming that we are alone. And then we start to realize, well, no, that's not the case. There are billions and billions and billions of galaxies, stars, planets, and points of light out there. And we are traversing through our own galaxy on our solar system ride, so to speak. So we're all here on the same ride. If we could all get along and start really having some real grown-up, mature, and intelligent conversations, I'm sure we could really start to get to the bottom of a lot of these questions that we have and a lot of these issues that we face. And we're starting that with a show like this, and that's why I have the lovely Linda Moulton Howe with me tonight to try to get into these subjects for you. So Linda, welcome back. I want you to continue where you were left off there at the break regarding this idea of this classified information that you were discussing, and how we can sort of relate this to people regarding the idea of hybrids or different species that might be interacting with the powers that be on the planet.
Thank you, David. And I'd like to reference you and your audience to my news website, earthfiles.com. Think of a reporter who files news about the Earth, earthfiles.com. I recently, in May, did a series of reports based on firsthand experience by the mother of a blind girl who went to college and ended up being assigned a roommate who came with an alleged father who was a colonel in the United States Air Force at Mathers Air Force Base in Sacramento, California. And it was in the interaction between Helen Luttrell, the mother, the daughter, Marissa, and the girl who was introduced by the U.S. Air Force colonel and called Rachel Nadine. Nadine was not their real last name. These were names used to protect them, but the first name, Rachel, spelled in a variation of R-A-E-C-H-E-L, and as I understand it, that name was assigned to her because she was an extraterrestrial hybrid from a faraway solar system, way beyond our solar system, and that the government of the United States had been trying to run a hybridization program since the 1950s, in which this U.S. Air Force colonel had evolved over the decades. And the goal was to see and try to teach others from another planetary system that hybridized with humans and were living underground on this planet how they could live above on the surface. Now, why would extraterrestrials from another solar system someplace else want to interact with Earth? Well, you have to think in terms of time scales as it has been described to me. One man working for the Defense Intelligence Agency who retired after 23 years of, as he described, monitoring, researching and monitoring the geopolitical territorial conflicts of three extraterrestrial civilizations on this planet, and defined that at least two of them had been here for 270 million years at least, and that they had terraformed and geoengineered, and that they would explain so many of the so-called mythologies of Atlantis and Lemuria and so forth, and would explain so many things having to do with stone structures such as pyramids and ziggurats and stone circles and pillars all over this planet, and that they had something to do with energy and communication that the extraterrestrials created and used. And that now we're in the 21st century after 60 years of policies of denial by our government and the allies of World War II, who thought that if any human on the planet learned the truth about the nature of this planet, that we were not alone in the universe, that there were other civilizations that have come and gone on this planet for literally millions of years, that the fabric of society would fall apart, that religions would fall apart, the stock markets would fall down, and all of that. Those were the reasons given. Well, now, in 2014, some of those same people who once upon a time kept all of these policies of denial and lies are at the end of their lives, and they feel that it is a mistake to keep this a secret. And those are a few of the whistleblowers who have come forth with their firsthand information. And in this case of Helen Luttrell, the mother with the blind daughter in college, and the roommate who shows up with an Air Force colonel called Rachel, and this went into a 2005 book that I recommend to everyone. It's called Rachel's Eyes. And the whole reason for this is Helen Luttrell, the mother, was at her daughter's apartment and wanted to meet the new roommate, Rachel. And Rachel came out with books in her arm and tripped on a rug. Marissa had told her mother that the new roommate really didn't seem to be able to move around quite well. she tripped on a rug, and as she was falling with books in her arm, unlike a human, she didn't extend her arms to break her fall. She was falling forward, hanging onto the books, and she was going to literally hit the floor with her head. And Helen Luttrell extended her arm, grabbed a hold of Rachel's left wrist, and as she did, she said, "Linda, I wasn't grabbing bone. I wasn't grabbing a human arm. I was grabbing something that felt spongy, and it was cold, and I knew something's wrong here." And then at that same moment, the big black sunglasses that Rachel always wore, she was always covered up in a coat, she always had a scarf over her head, and she had these big sunglasses, which didn't matter to the blind girl roommate. It was a perfect combination. But when the glasses fell down Rachel's nose, as Helen Luttrell has a hold of the spongy wrist, she's seeing solid avocado green. Think of the color of avocado near the pit. And that inside of the solid avocado, no whites, were vertical black pupils, as she said, like a cat's. And I asked her, "Or like a snake?" And she said, "Yes, I guess it could be either one." She said, "I don't like snakes, so I always try to think of it as like a cat." And at my website, earthfiles.com, I have drawings that Helen did, photographs, sketches, a symbol that was on odd food that was brought in a truck to Marissa's apartment to feed Rachel by the colonel. All of these things are discussed in great detail in a series of reports that are followed by viewer comments, and people are coming forward, not speaking with their first real name, but people are now coming forward and saying that they identify with this report on Rachel because of own experiences in their own lives, suggesting that the hybrids above ground are something that is happening more than any of us would have thought. And then recently I talked with Anthony Sanchez, who wrote a very important book that came out in 2010 and 2011 called UFO Highway. He has an Air Force colonel who spoke to him, not with his real name, but said that he wanted somebody to tell the story of hybrids and cloning underground in the area of Dulce, New Mexico. So now we've got one at Area 51 in California. That was Helen Luttrell's story. We have one in underground in Dulce, where there have been rumors for decades about Dulce. And David, what I think is beginning to emerge is that underground on this planet, whether all there now, but that for millennia, the planet has been used probably above ground and below ground, and that when our government decided that they were dealing with non-humans who could demonstrate that they had these underground facilities, that the government said nobody is to know because nobody will be able to handle this disclosure. Well, now jump to 2014. Because one of the constant and emerging themes, whether you're talking with military or intel whistleblowers, or you are talking with somebody who is in the abduction syndrome, there is increasing information that the main reason for extraterrestrials on Earth is to mix and match genes to make humanoid clones and hybrids, because that there's one or more life forms out there that has some kind of a survival problem, and that there is a huge effort to perpetuate at least one other civilization that is biologically in trouble. Its DNA is not functioning correctly. And here is the interesting twist, that the extraterrestrials that are in trouble would have to go back to the planet or planets where they had used their own genes to make hybrids long ago. That would be the planet with the healthiest DNA to help them at a time in their future where they were running into these problems. So suddenly, it is as if we have a big story that has been unfolding for at least six decades in various facets that included animal mutilations, the human abduction syndrome, all of the various craft and lights in the sky, in the water, on the land, a huge menagerie of different types of beings, completely confusing everyone. And suddenly it is coming into focus that there may be three main types, that they make all kinds of hybrids and clones that can do all kinds of work just the way we would do machines, but they're biological, and that there is a survival problem on the part of at least one civilization, that our planet is being used as a pharmacy, a pharmacy to help keep another civilization alive. If that were the solid bottom line truth, I think all humans would be able to handle our human governments explaining that, and that we might then get on to the business of having straightforward trade routes with other forms of life in this universe for their needs, for our needs. They might solve our energy problems while we help them with genetic material. Instead of plucking cows up in beams in the night, maybe it could be done on some sort of more straightforward basis without anybody being afraid, and a win-win for everyone. Now, I'm not saying that this is proven, and I'm not saying that the answers would be this simple. But what I am trying to do is take a huge, complex series of issues and say that all of us need to start thinking about other life in the universe that has been coming and going on this planet, may have its own survival issues, and that maybe the transition that we are headed toward is finally seeing those headlines around the planet. We're not alone in this universe. We never have been. Here is the proof. And then later on will come the headlines introducing us to some extraterrestrial person or form here on this planet. And then we will finally get on to joining in with the rest of the cosmos. And we've all hoped this would happen in our lifetime. The second part may not happen in our lifetimes, but I think the first part, the discovery or the admission that we're not alone in the universe, might come in the next 1, 2, 3, 4 years, because NASA seems to be headline after headline after headline that we now have found habitable planets. There are lots of planets like Earth. And that seems to be setting up a theme for all of us. And, David, wouldn't it make sense that we all wake up to those three-inch headlines? Life, whether it's microbial or plant or what, life has been discovered on, and fill in the blank, Mars, Enceladus, another nearby planet. And then all the reporters in the world get to screen questions about life on another planet that is not this planet. And they get through that first wave, and the planet settles into, we're not alone in this universe, and everything goes forward. And the Pope has already said that he would totally agree that there would be other life in this universe. That would just enhance the power and the universality of the divine field. The Pope has said those variations on those words, and that there wouldn't be a collapse, and that we could then move to the next step, which might be literal trade routes, where we were conscious as humans on this planet working with others that are out there.
Wow, that's a lot. And I just wanted to add a couple things. I mean, you're talking about how we've got NASA talking more openly about this. I mean, pretty much any mainstream scientist today is not found talking as if there's no such thing as life elsewhere. The question has always just been, you know, are they actually here, and when are they going to contact us openly? And then you've got to couple that with the fact that, yes, we've got these big, huge religious institutions like the Vatican coming out and speaking more and more in the last few years about how it's okay as a believer in the Catholic faith to also believe in the fact that we're not alone in the universe and that there's all kinds of life out there. And then you also have the media, all the movies, the television shows are now more and more geared towards this theme. The question that comes to my mind, we've got about 8 minutes left here with you, Linda, is the idea that there are competing agendas going on. I mean, clearly there is evidence that a lot of the interactions with non-humans historically and in modern times have not always been friendly and positive, not always, you know, displaying things like being able to trust or showing indications of right. being able to trust certain groups. That doesn't mean all of them. Many have been very benevolent. So my question is, when you have the government come out or something like the Vatican, who has also its own sort of shady history in many regards, and you've got these other, factors of evidence coming in from the abduction phenomena and other sources, you know, government whistleblowers, etc., saying that not everything is honky-dory. Well, maybe when they come out with something like this, do you think that they're going to give you the full facts, or do you think this also could be in some form a way of manipulating people as to their perspective of how this unfolds for them?
Oh, David, it's a good question, and there will definitely be manipulation and every effort to have the press release, the press conference of all centuries, be as limited as possible, be as surface as possible. My job doesn't go away with that yeah. announcement.
It's just going to get
forever. I always have honored the pressure of fact. I like truth, not lies. I think that in the long run, that we're in a universe in which truth is always supported in the long run. So, do I expect governments and authorities to just tell everything? No. But we have to get past this cemented idea that we're alone in the universe. We're not. We never have been. And I want to address the whole issue of extraterrestrials perhaps not being trustworthy, perhaps lying, perhaps manipulating, and some of the negatives that people in the abduction syndrome have felt. And one of the classic cases that ties directly to Marissa, Helen Luttrell, and Rachel, the hybrid, as she was identified by the U.S. Air Force colonel to Helen Luttrell and Marissa, is when the mother and daughter, after the glasses fell, after they knew they were not looking at a human, after Helen knew that it was not a human arm, they had this sit down with the colonel, and they wanted to know, well, where is she from? And the answer was Zeta Reticuli 1. Zeta Reticuli 1 is one of two binary stars that are about 39 light years from our planet Earth. Jump back to 1961, and the first publicized human abduction case on record, meaning that it made world news, was Betty and Barney Hill in the White Mountains of New Hampshire. And Betty is the one who remembered being on board with these gray-skinned entities with large glassy eyes that she thought that they were some kind of covering, and that they showed her like a three-dimensional hologram on the wall. It was a star map. She was able to remember enough of the star map to draw it under hypnosis later on back the town where she lived with her husband, Barney. They were both abducted. And what did Betty Hill in the 1961 to 62 to 63 period, as she went through this process of recovering her memory, say? And drew the map, and the star map turned out to be supported as being an absolute representation of 16 stars in our little arm of the Milky Way galaxy that are stars just like our G2 spectrum sun. 16, all of the same type, and Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2 was named by Betty and Barney Hill as the source of those that took her. Now, that's 61, Helen Luttrell, Marissa, and Rachel are 1972 in Sacramento. completely two ends of the country, 11 years apart. And the whole question about the intent, the agenda of the beings that handled Betty and Barney Hill in New Hampshire kept coming up. And Betty felt that they really wanted her to have a book and they wanted her to understand about them, but that there was some restriction. Well, later on, probably after I had started working on the HBO special called UFOs, the ET Factor in 1983, and I was getting government blocks while I was trying to do that film. I'll never forget one of the government types that crossed my path somewhere in 83, 84, 85 said, the Betty and Barney Hill aliens were renegades, R-E-N-E-G-A-D-E-S, meaning they were outside of some system, that they were doing something on their own, that they were not complying with a treaty that the United States insiders kept saying that Truman had created a treaty saying, yes, you can mutilate some animals for protein, yes, you can abduct some people for medical reasons, and we will make sure that your underground territories are protected and you can continue to work on this planet secretly and while you help us with technology. That is the description of the treaty. Now, renegade suggests that somebody in the government is interpreting the Betty and Barney Hill beings as not complying with the treaty, being outside of the system. Well, Betty would say she thought they were good guys that were trying to help us understand something. Do you see now, depending upon whether you're on the inside of government authority and you don't want any of this told to a public because you have a policy of denial and a treaty, anything that extraterrestrials would do that didn't comply with that understanding would be considered negative. But if you're outside of government structure, if you are out where humans are, there are people who have had legs restored, who have had various things happen to restore their health, and they would say that there were beings that did not want to hurt us, that wanted to help us, but they need something from this planet and us too. So aren't we on the brink of major transitional discoveries in which we're not alone in the universe has to come first? Second, who else is in this universe? How many of them have been coming and going on this planet? What structures did they build millions of years ago, thousands of years ago, for what reason? Why are some of them interacting? And will any of those ancient builders of the ziggurats, stone circles, come back? And what would happen if they did?
Very, very important questions, Linda. And unfortunately, the break is coming once again, the end of the hour here. It goes by pretty quick. And I apologize we lost about 5 minutes there in the beginning. But I just want to thank you so much for coming on.
Strange busy signal.
A quick update. Earthfiles.com.
Radio.
No hate, no hype, no fear. Real people, real radio.
More things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy. And that's from Hamlet, Act 1, Scene 5. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Hour number 2. And, wow, I really wish I could have kept Linda for another segment or two, but she's a very busy lady. All kinds of stories that she's working on, and I definitely urge you to go and check out her website. I'm not sure if it got cut off at the end there, but it is earthfiles.com. Support her work. Check it out for yourself. Do your own research. And make up your own mind. And that's really the theme of what we're trying to do here, is to present information to you, to present the work of people that have diligently been pursuing their different niche fields of expertise, and yet are sadly unheard in the mainstream or in the status quo arena. So it's important that we hear all sides before making our decisions or forming our opinions about these subjects, in my opinion. Anyways, and so it's an honor to do this show, and I'm very glad I was able to have Linda on. How do you get her in only 1 hour? It's pretty tough, but I think we covered a lot of points that'll at least get the thinking process going. She always blows my mind. So what I'm going to do in this second hour is I'm going to go through a couple points about this topic in general. So if you are new to this subject, or you're on the fence about this subject, or you are skeptical about this subject, about this idea that we are being visited, that we are interacting with, and that we have influence here on behalf of off-world intelligences. I'm going to put that in as broad a context as I possibly can, because there's all kinds of debate as to what their names are, what they look like, what their characteristics might be. But I really think we're dealing with a whole smorgasbord of things, just like you might find, I don't know, on the surface of this planet itself, or if you look at some fascinating discoveries that have been made in the oceans of this planet, the diversity of life that exists that was unknown for so long. I mean, even look at the history of the panda bear, and how it was a recent discovery, and they couldn't discover this type of bear because of where it lived, where it was situated. It was living in these bamboo forests that were very thick, very dense, difficult for humans to get out to that area, and really there was no inclination to go out to these remote zones on the planet. I know Lloyd Pye has done some fantastic work in talking about a lot of the strange creatures that have been discovered countless times, over and over again, all over the planet, and all throughout history they've been talked about. It's funny, Linda was bringing up this idea that there could be some life inhabiting the interior of the planet. There's been a lot of speculation on this idea of hollow Earth. And I personally gotta say that I think that we're not dealing with hollow Earth the way most people think of it. This is basically where my research is at right now, after looking at this and interviewing many people on this subject. It's not like a tennis ball where you just have a shell and it's just completely hollow. What you are dealing with is a cavernous, it's a situation of caverns and tunnels and roadways maybe big giant sections or caves or whatnot. I mean, they just found an incredibly vast, undiscovered, untouched cave system in Vietnam, of all places. I believe it was South Vietnam. And they had some really breathtaking pictures. Oh, I can't remember. Where was I looking at this? I watched a couple of videos on it, saw some pictures. And I think it was on Discovery or something. And they found just vast networks of connecting tunnels. It was like a rainforest down there, and they went pretty deep. Like, they literally had to basically skydive down these enormous tunnels into this area, this little remote paradise-like place in the center of the land there, or deep into the earth. And there's been many of these places reported, and throughout history, there's been all kinds of myths, legends, and stories about strange beings coming from coming outside of caves, coming from within the earth, you know, bringing people down into their palaces that were located within the planet, etc. All kinds of stories. And then, of course, you have this phenomenon of underground bases being built by humans or being built by, you know, the military-industrial complex, one branch or another. And Richard Sauter has written some fantastic books on that. I interviewed him a couple years ago. And there's some fascinating things to be discovered when you really think about it, ladies and gentlemen. And that's really what we're trying to do here, is to get you to think about it and to ask these questions without that knee-jerk reaction that takes place, which is, it's crazy. It couldn't be. We couldn't possibly be being visited by intelligences from other places. It's impossible. I really think that when you mull that over in your head and you think about it, it's a crazy notion, the way I see it, to think that the odds are moving in that direction, where we're alone, we're the only ones, or even in the direction of, okay, we're alone, we're the only ones close enough to ourselves to, there's nobody that's close enough to come and see us and visit us. They don't have the technology to get here. We don't have the technology to get there, so therefore, nobody else could possibly have the technology to get where we are. Well, I think it's insane. It doesn't make any sense. And I would suggest that you think about this and think about it outside the box, outside of that safe framework that has been built for you ever since you were young, that this is all there is, folks. This is all life is, going to school, getting a job, getting married, having kids, having a mortgage, having a retirement plan, having investments, retiring, spending your last few years doing what you've always wanted to do but are probably too old to do anyways. And then, of course, you pass on. And that's kind of what's been delivered to you, and you hope you can get the best out of it. And it's all just us. We're just here. We're just a bunch of biological computers that have no soul essence, and we are just, drifting aimlessly through outer space. And I just don't think that that's all there is to it, folks. That's the way I see it. So here, let's do this. I've been working on this kind of idea of how to bridge the gap between the field of ufology, the study of exopolitics, and this idea, of course, that we're not alone in the universe, and we've been interacted with probably for thousands of years, but at the very least, we have documentation of at least the last 60 to 100 years. And how do you couple that field with the field of understanding that there are systems of control at work on the planet, that this planet is set up very much like a farm, if you really think about it. If you really get into understanding the way that these systems of power that we are quote-unquote victim to, although I don't choose to view myself or anybody as a victim, but in a sense, we are all victim in one way or another of the systems that are at work in the world, the governmental apparatus, the financial apparatus, the religious ideologies that are still at war with each other, still killing each other and trying to fight for dominance and fulfillment of prophecy. Or whether you look at really any of the other systems that we've set up. There is also the world of conspiratorial research. How do you merge these two fields? Is there a connection? Because what I find is that when I interview people, I see that there's usually people that are on one side and they haven't really looked into the other side. They haven't looked into all the different various clandestine activity throughout history that has set up what we call modern day politics and government and banking. And there's been collusion behind the scenes to keep the human race in chains because of a fear of what we would do. How do you couple that idea? You know, there's this idea, there's this agenda of creating what these elites in the world prefer to call a new world order. They're creating a world of order through what they perceive order to be. And when they write down what they perceive order to be, it looks very much like the Hunger Games / Equilibrium / The Matrix / every dystopian, futuristic, nightmarish movie or television series you've watched, you know, it looks like that. It's coming out of their mouths, and you read a lot of these guys' quotes, memoirs, books, writings, you listen to their speeches, you see the evidence all around you that, of course, we're moving more and more to centralization of power, centralization of decision-making in the world. And we're just talking in the human domain here. And we see that forces are that are higher than government are guiding the countries of the world into this one world system. And there's been plenty of writing and talk about the fact that there are people in this category, this elite status, that believe that the world is overpopulated. There's too many of us. And so it's their job to pick and choose who stays and who goes. And could that be also part of what's going on? Could there also be a mass culling of the population taking place? The allowance of these diseases to ravage the world unchecked. And even though there's the smoke screen of, oh yeah, we mean well and we're working on it. We're working on the problem. Just please donate here. Please run and do a marathon over there. And maybe we'll be able to eventually come up with a cure. When of course it's been known for a long time how to prevent these types of diseases and illnesses from spreading. And I've had many people on this show to talk about that. So how do you basically bring all these things together? Because it seems like sometimes there's groups within the world of ufology and the world of studying world history, geopolitics, and I would call them, you know, nefarious agendas or psychopathy at work in the highest realms of power and decision-making in the world, or what might also be classified as conspiracy. How do you get these two fields to talk to each other? It's happening more and more. I had extensive discussions with Richard Dolan about this on the tour. I find that I'm actually very impressed at the amount of work he has done to try to bridge these gaps, and he's been doing a lot more research of his own into a lot of these other sides of what's going on and asking that question, just like I am and just like many others have. Is there a connection? How does it connect? Are we dealing with tiers of, you know, like a pyramidal structure? You got management systems in place. You've got board level. You've got CEO level. You have investors. You have, you know, the idea people, the people that create the ideas. And then you have these different orders and groups, these round table groups. If you start getting into Cecil Rhodes and the work of people like Geoffrey Griffin, who would talk about organizations and groups like the Bilderberg Group, Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, on and on and on and on, World Trade Organizations, World Bank, International Monetary Fund, reserve banking, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you see that there is criminality working behind the scenes. And unfortunately, this is the system that has been created by psychopaths for psychopaths, as I was talking about last week. Getting into the subject of mind control in propaganda that has been used again and again by various governments and leadership councils throughout history right up to the present day. So how does that work with this subject? These big questions. Are we alone in the universe? Are there other groups interacting with us here? What is the nature of those groups? What is the agenda of those groups? And I think it's important to merge all of this because, I mean, truth is unifying, isn't it? It's something that unifies. It's something that the only way you can come upon the truth is if you're looking at multiple points, multiple data points. You can't just find the truth about a subject by becoming oriented towards only one viewpoint or looking at only one piece of the puzzle, so to speak. You could be very skilled and knowledgeable and well-researched on that particular puzzle piece. But until you collaborate with others who are also experts in their field, they're good at what they bring to the table. How can you really get a big picture here about what's taking place on planet Earth and with the human race as a whole. These are big subjects. These are big questions. We're not here asking questions that are on any kind of minute level. This is historic discussion, in my opinion. This is where the conversation should be at. You know, what direction is this planet heading? And who's steering it in that direction? Is it just naturally, you know, heading down the stream on its own? Is nobody driving this thing? Or is there just no captain on the boat? Is the boat just drifting off to sea? Is that what's taking place on spaceship Earth? Was there once a pilot? Was it once piloted by us, humanity, on one level? You know, or at least given that status, that responsibility? And then was it a situation where our ship got hijacked by pirates? Were those pirates us? An element within humanity? Those sociopathic minds, those psychopathic minds that would really be only out for their own interest at the expense of everyone else and everything else around them? I mean, come on, we've created atomic weapons and we've exploded a good 2,000 plus of these things on the planet and up in the upper ionosphere. That's psychotic. That's insane. I mean, if you were on a boat and somebody started lighting off grenades and firecrackers on one of the lower decks, you'd be like, hey man, cut it out with the lighting of the fireworks and the explosive materials on the boat. We need this boat. It's the only boat we got. This boat explodes, we're lost at sea. Well folks, if this planet goes through what it could go through should, let's just say, the Middle East start heating up with what's going on over there, and NATO getting involved, and Russia getting involved, and North Korea just sitting on the side, who knows what they're up to, thinking about, you know, all the different weaponry that they have to test out and they want to use. And you got all these competing agendas taking place right here on the planet, and there's psychopaths with their finger on the launch code buttons, okay? And it's just a miracle we haven't exploded ourselves to this point. And maybe we do have some intervention. Maybe we do have some help. Maybe there is some momentum coming our way. Maybe that's what this is about. Maybe that's why we're seeing so much chaos and disorder right now. Maybe that's why everything's all, you know, it's opening up. It's really becoming exposed what's going on. I mean, for people that I discuss or just have regular everyday conversations with that are not looking at this at all, it's very difficult to say very much about anything because it's just such a huge amount of information to go through with people. But this is why I do the show. This is why I do YouTube rants. This is why I have started putting on conferences. This is why I've trained and studied martial arts as a discipline my whole life, was to try to learn as much as I can, to interact with people that are able to teach me something and that I'm also able to share something with. And that way we can ask these questions together. We can contemplate these fascinating subjects and these mysteries together. And hopefully we can come up with not only an answer, but also some solutions to the problems that we face. So that's where I want to leave my introduction to this. I've been putting together this, I don't know, summation of knowledge and information on these two subjects. You know, are we dealing with cosmic predators here? Are we dealing with psychopathic rulers? Or are we dealing with a little bit from column A, a little bit from column B, and everything in between? Are we dealing with a wide variety of things here? And so we're trying to bridge the gap between researchers. And I think this is another thing that is very important for especially people like me. Just, you know, I'm just a regular guy. I did a lot of research on this stuff, passionate about it, started a radio show. Anybody else out there that is involved in radio, or you're doing your own thing, or you're just a researcher, or you're just a casual onlooker, you know, no matter what, you gotta start contributing in some way to this conversation and asking the questions that you want to ask and bringing out the information that you come across. And we got to compare notes at some point, and we got to start talking to each other. And that's the job. We've got brilliant researchers out there in so many different fields. We got people that are on it. You know what I mean? They're on it when it comes to their subject. So how do we bridge the gap? It's not up to them. So stop calling everybody Illuminati insider shills just because they have a different view on a particular subject. Okay? It's up to you not to have somebody tell you what the truth is or what the evidence is or what the facts are. It's up to you to go out and research it for yourself. Said that time and time again. That's my opinion. I'm going to keep saying it because it's important. Because otherwise you're just following another person's mind instead of developing your own. And we can lean on each other. We can share information and we can learn from each other. But we also have to get into that creative mindset as well and be able to create something that we can also bring what we have to the table. Because we all have something to bring to the table. No matter how small and insignificant you think you are, you're not. You're actually here and you're alive and you're living on planet Earth at this time, the year 2014, according to our system of measurement. And you are here for a reason. And I would strongly suggest that that reason is not to just live here in chains and in an incredibly chaotic and some ways horrific environment of crime, poverty, disease, war, corruption taking place on every level, ecological disaster, uncertainty. It's not all just about that. And it's also not just about the 9 to 5, take your kids to the park, go to the movies, you know, have a glass of red wine, do whatever you do to relax, and that's it. That's it. I mean, we got to do those things, but come on, it's not it. So there's two extremes here, and I would say we got to balance it out just like we have to balance out our approach to these very, very big subjects. So I really like that quote from that scene in Hamlet because it really brings the humility factor in, because I know that the minute you talk to people, and I know if you're listening to the show, you're out there talking to people, and you're bringing up little subjects here and there, or, you know, usually people bring it up and you just talk about it, right? You start sharing your opinion on something. And if your opinion is in any way deviating from the status quo or what's been reported through the newspapers and the television shows, etc., if you're deviating from the public mind, if you're deviating from the collective consciousness of the status quo, then you're going to be viewed as insane, or that you don't know what you're talking about, or that you're naive, or that you're not willing to listen to the people that have the real facts. And what happens is there's a sense of arrogance that takes place in people, and I think that sense of arrogance comes from fear. It comes from fear of walking the path of the unknown. Fear is usually about the unknown. It's usually something we make up in our own heads. Okay? And that's differentiating from fear that happens because you need to survive in a situation. Of course, you're gonna feel some fear that's gonna get, you know, light a fire under your ass and you're gonna do what you gotta do in the moment. That's different. That's reactionary. It's natural. It's a survival mechanism. But then there's fear that lingers and eats away at you and it taunts you and it toys with you and it can create depression and it can create also go the other way. It can create very, very extroverted, flamboyant people that are out there that are speaking as though they are the ones that have all the, you know, they're not going to hear what you have to say because, of course, they've got it all figured out. And when you see someone that has it all figured out, you just know that, of course, that person is just not on that stage of their journey where they're ready to expand. It doesn't mean we have to judge those people. I'm sure there's many areas in my life where I still have to open up more and learn to expand. And I've been learning a lot about myself. And I'm fully open and ready to go in any direction that the truth of the matter would take me. I'm not here to want all of these things to be true or to just play devil's advocate or to just keep offering up a different side just to be antagonistic. I'm here doing very, very in-depth research and a lot of deep thinking and, you know, introspection, creating my own opinions and ideas and pursuing my own questioning And I think that that's a very healthy place to be, where you're flexible for change. And in a time where we're in constant change and constant evolution, we have to become more flexible, I think. And that's why it's important to be open-minded when it comes to these things, not to just instantly shut the book, close the door, turn off the TV, close the computer, turn off the radio, whatever it is, just because you heard something you don't want to be true or you don't want to start contemplating. That's different than aligning yourself with what is. Totally different. We have to be open to what is, not what should be according to your belief system. So again, there are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy. And we'll be back in a few minutes with another segment here on TruthFrequencyRadio.com. Stay put, ladies and gentlemen. And welcome back, everybody. You're more than welcome to stay with me here on Truth Warrior for another segment. We've got another 30 minutes ahead of us. And let's get into it, shall we? We're talking about, are we alone in the universe? Is it just us? What is the answer to that question? I think we've already answered it. We had Linda Moulton Howe join us for the first hour talking about her take on some of this, getting into some pretty interesting territory. And of course, I think it's ludicrous to think that we're not, or that we are alone in the universe. But the question becomes, is there interaction taking place between off-world intelligences and on-world intelligences? Is there some kind of a communication going on? Has it been going on recently, or has it been going on since our origins here? So let's take a look at what modern science has to say about this. I'm just going to go through three clips from some different journals and articles that I was browsing this past few weeks. And this one comes from Science World Report. This is just talking about habitable planets. And this is a peer-reviewed journal. It's called the Astrophysical Journal Letters. And they did some speculation on this because they made some discoveries. And they say this: there may be more habitable planets out there than we once thought. Astronomers have discovered that cloud behavior on planets orbiting red dwarfs actually doubles how many are habitable. The finding means that in the Milky Way galaxy alone, there are approximately 60 billion planets that may be orbiting red dwarf stars in the habitable zone. And that number is up from their previously reported numbers, which was around, I think it was about 15 or 16 billion planets. So they're going all the way up to 60 billion. This is in a mainstream scientific journal. This comes from, where did I just put that note? This is the Daily Galaxy, and this is via the CFA and the ESA Hubble Telescope Information Center. Okay, so this is coming from the Information Center. They say the Hubble Space Telescope site estimates that there are hundreds of billions of galaxies in the universe. A recent German supercomputer simulation estimates that the number may be as high as 500 billion, with many older than the Milky Way. They don't yet know how many of these worlds are inhabitable zones, but the implications of this discovery are astounding. Simply put, if there are 17 billion Earth-sized worlds in our galaxy alone, of course that previous quote was talking about it being closer to 60 billion, then it's clear that the universe has the potential to be teeming with life. And that's a quote. And then, of course, we now know that many scientists believe we are not alone in the universe. It's probable, they say, that life could have arisen on at least some of the billions of planets throughout or thought to exist in our galaxy alone, let alone the amount of galaxies that are abundant in our universe. And I think it's honestly unlimited. I think they're just, they need to put a number on it. So 500 billion is where they put it. And from the NASA website, they did a paper called Finding Life Beyond Earth is Within Reach. And there's a quote coming from that article that says, sometime in the near future, people will be able to point to a star and say, that star has a planet like Earth, says Sarah Seeger, professor of planetary science and physics at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Astronomers think it is very likely that every single star in our Milky Way galaxy has at least one planet. Okay, so that's just a few clippings from some very recent reports and studies from the scientific community on this subject. We've even got people like Richard Dawkins talking about this. We've got many scientists. We've had many scientists come out and talk about this openly. The fact that, you know, we've been considering this idea of what the Darwinian theory of human evolution is talking about. And yeah, there's still a lot of holes in that. And we're still not figuring it out. And I think behind the scenes, there's a lot of scientists that are in full knowledge that when it comes to human evolution, when it comes to macroevolution, that that theory is missing a lot of information about the origin of the species. And not to say that everything in it is flawed, but of course, we also know that there is an agenda to hide the truth from the public. And then on the religious side, you just have a complete misunderstanding of a lot of the ancient writings that they reference, and a complete discounting of even a lot of the quotations coming from their holy books discussing this notion. Many of these books were also expelled from, if you're talking about the Bible, for example, you have, of course, what are known as the apocryphal works. You have works that have been kicked out or rejected, such as the Book of Enoch, that talk in detail about interactions with off-world intelligences, the merging of the gods or the angels or the fallen ones with humanity, and on we could go. So if we get into ancient knowledge, you can search no further than Giordano Bruno. Back in the year 1600, this poor guy was tortured and burned at the stake by the Vatican for what he said, and what he said was this: innumerable suns exist. Innumerable Earths revolve about these suns in a manner similar to the way that the seven planets revolve around our sun. Living beings inhabit these worlds. That was back in the year 1600. It's quite some time ago. Jack Barringer, in his book Past Shock, he says, more than 30,000 written documents from all over the world tell of advanced beings who either came to Earth or who were already living on Earth. And, of course, you can go through all these different texts, you know, the Nag Hammadi Library, a lot of the ancient Sumerian writings, many of the oral traditions coming from the Celts, the Druids, and the native aboriginals of various lands. You know, you got the Hopi, you've got the Cherokee, you've got the Zulus in Africa, you've got in South Africa, of course, as well, you've got people coming forward like Credo Mutwa talking very openly about this, and how this is knowledge that's not talked about in their culture as being something that is, oh, is this even a question? No, it's talked about very matter-of-factly, and it always has been. I spoke to a few different people from the native cultures here in Canada on our tour, and they were enlightening us to the whole concept of star beings and star elders and how they know that their race comes from the stars and that humanity was seeded from the stars. And then you get into even more deeper realms in discovery of science, and you realize that, oh my gosh, human beings are made up of the same stuff as stars. We are all made of stars, right? Like that Moby song. But anyways, that's actual scientific discussion. So, you know, and then you got this quote from Lawrence Gardner, which is very interesting. He's talking about how it took man over 1 million years to progress from using stones as he found them to the realization that they could be chipped and flaked to better purpose. It then took another 500,000 years before Neanderthal man mastered the concept of stone tools and a further 50,000 years before crops were cultivated and metallurgy was discovered. I mean, just think about what it takes to develop metallurgy. Metallurgy, people, working with metal, making things into metal, hammering out metal, creating things out of metal. This is a very complex thing to come up with, just of a bunch of evolving apes to just suddenly, it's as if a light switches on and boom, here we go. Sorry, let me finish that quote. Hence, by all scales of evolutionary reckoning, we should still be far removed from any basic understanding of mathematics, engineering, or science. But here we are, only 7,000 years later, landing probes on Mars. So how did we inherit wisdom, and from whom? It's very interesting. Of course, I'm just going through stuff that I'm sure if you're seasoned in this research, this is all the ABCs, but it needs to be said. It needs to be repeated. People need to know about it. They need to think about it. And even if you know about it, you need to be reminded of what you know. This is what this is, a constant process of learning. Now, let's start with cosmic predators. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about this idea that we're not just dealing with a bunch of bankers sitting around a round table or a bunch of rich industrialists that have helped engineer the ebb and flow of society throughout history, or elites or royals or any of that. Let's just put that on the back burner for now, okay? Because clearly that's already, we know that that has always been here, and it still is. But let's think about this from the perspective of the cosmos, a cosmic perspective. Remember when you were a kid, and you're lying down on the grass, and you're looking up at the stars? This was before, you know, this incredible inundation of chemicals being sprayed in the sky. So now you could actually, back then you could really see stars. Like, it was amazing. It wasn't just a bunch of hazy fog hanging out in front of your vision. But anyways, you're sitting there, you're lying on the grass, you're looking up at the stars, you're playing out the constellations, you're, you know, and your imagination just starts going and you're looking up at that thing. I just remember as a kid, I just knew, I don't care who the smartest adult on this planet is. I used to tell myself as a kid, I don't care who the smartest adult on this planet is. We don't know jack shit. That's kind of the impression I got, okay? As a kid, looking up there and looking at the amount of stars and planets and, you know, just realizing this is just a small little patch of sky and look at what I am witnessing here. This is just incredible. So we need to get back to that mindset of wonder and letting our imagination go sometimes. There's nothing wrong with that. We're told, nope, it's gotta be all left brain, analytical, fact-based, documented, peer-reviewed evidence in order to even think about this subject. I want to see all of those things on my desk by 6 a.m. sharp. Well, I'll tell you what. My mind doesn't work like that. My mind works from the state of first starting with imagination and creativity. First starting with these ideas, these notions, these feelings, these intuitive feelings, and then going on the process going, okay, I'm going to now do some research and see if I can't find that evidence to back it up. Okay? And I think that's a good way to do it. And you go through a process of deducting what isn't true. And you go, okay, check, check, check. You go through a checklist, all right? And that's how you do it. And you then, that's still only a hypothesis. Pretty much everything we have is still only a hypothesis. There's still more to be discovered. You know, science right now is being turned upside down. There is war taking place, folks, in the scientific world, let me tell you. Because there's all kinds of theories just melting away in light of new evidence. There's new maverick scientists and scholars out there that are coming out more and more that are brave enough and intelligent enough to go and actually look at the bigger picture and bring forward new information based on the research that they've done. And this is happening all through these different fields in science. So we are in a tumultuous period in scientific investigation, as it is. Now look at the religious world, just fighting and splintering and evolving and morphing into new religions and new ideas constantly. You're talking to people from one particular ideology and they're already starting to say, yeah, don't really agree with that part, but I like this part still, so I'm going to go with that. But that's even that is an evolutionary step in their thinking, you know, instead of being in a fixed state where, nope, I've got all the answers answered for me. I feel better about my life because I've answered all the questions, so I don't have to think about it anymore. And that's why people usually turn to something like religion. But what we're talking about here is a natural exploration, a natural organic desire to explore the mysteries of your own being and of the universe and of the planet you live on and of the time in which you live. I mean, you've only got one life, supposedly, to live. But either way, make it count, make it exciting, ask the questions, and see what you can't find out and contribute to humanity and contribute to the planet and contribute to the people that are around you, your friends, your family members, your loved ones, whether they like it or not, what can you contribute? And everybody around you can agree, disagree, but at the end of the day, at least you brought something. At least you brought something, right? That's the goal here. I digress. How much time I got? I got about 11 minutes. Okay, let's do this quick. Start with Cosmic Predator. I probably talked about this before. I'm just going to read it. I'm sure you have, but I'm going to run through it quickly. This is coming from Don Juan Mattis. This was written about by Carlos Castaneda, and this is coming from the wisdom of the Toltec tradition and how they view this idea of cosmic predators. And let me just say, there's many cultures that echo this exact same story in their way. Okay? But here we go. This is a good description. We have a predator that came from the depths of the cosmos and took over the rule of our lives. This is Don Juan talking to Carlos. Human beings are its prisoners. The predator is our lord and master. It has rendered us docile and helpless. If we want to protest it, it suppresses our protest. If we want to act independently, it demands that we don't do so. And he continues to say, I've been beating around the bush all this time, insinuating to you that something is holding us prisoner. And indeed, we are held prisoner. This was an energetic fact for the sorcerers of ancient Mexico. They took us over because we are food for them, and they squeeze us mercilessly because we are their sustenance. Just as we rear chickens in chicken coops, the predators rear us in human coops, human arrows, you could say. Therefore, their food is always available to them. Now, just think about that, ladies and gentlemen. I know that sounds a little crazy if you've never contemplated these things before, but just think about it. We like to think of ourselves and view ourselves as being at the top of the food chain. Even though if you take away our intellect and all the fancy buildings that we've built to protect ourselves from the natural environment, we are probably the weakest being physically on the planet, and we are not at the top of the food chain. Just go hiking in the woods and try to cross paths with an angry grizzly bear. You know, or take your pick, okay? You can't outrun a cheetah. You can't out-wrestle or, you know, triangle choke a silverback gorilla, okay? You can't outbox an alligator, all right? We're clearly the weakest physically, and we are also the most anomalous when it comes to living beings on the planet. And we are the most antithetical to our own nature. We are in opposition to our own nature. We don't even know what our nature is. We're the only ones that are lost here. There's something anomalous with the human being. There's things that are missing. There's things that have been added. There's, you know, you talk to some geneticists that are brave enough to talk about this, because I've been speaking to many, and they talk about how, yes, we talk about this behind the scenes, but we don't really come out with this. But they say it. There's all kinds of issues and abnormalities within the human genome in comparison to other species of life on the planet. It's very unique. So just think about it. We may not be the most advanced predator, or we may not be at the top of the food chain. It's pretty simple. And the reason why we don't just see that those others, or those other life forms, is because of the fact that they are more intelligent. They're not stupid enough to just come right out and expose what's going on. And on a higher level, that doesn't mean they're all predators. They could also just be highly evolved, spiritually oriented, intelligent beings that don't want to interfere because they know intelligently that, well, that doesn't really make sense. You can't just come in and interfere with an evolving species, right? So just think about that. And it's funny because in Carlos's response here to his teacher, he's like, no. He replies, this is absurd, Don Juan. What you're saying is something monstrous. It simply can't be true for average men, for sorcerers, or for anyone. It just can't be true. And Don Juan looks at him and goes, why not? Why not? Just because it infuriates you? You haven't heard all the claims yet. He's saying to him, you haven't heard all the evidence. I want to appeal to your analytical mind. Think for a moment and tell me how you would explain the contradictions between the intelligence of man, the engineer, and the stupidity of his systems of beliefs. Or the stupidity of creating devices that would actually eradicate you as a species on the planet, like, you know, all these nuclear technologies, war machines, the military-industrial complex, etc., etc., etc. All of these things have been created by us and could end up destroying us. Why would we be so ridiculously stupid so as to create those things and to allow them to continue to exist? Anyways, so this is what he's saying. It's contradictory. So how do we explain that? And he says, the ancients believe that the predators have given us our systems of belief, our ideas of good and evil, our social mores. They are the ones who set up our hopes and expectations and dreams of success or failure. They have given us covetousness, greed, and cowardice. It is the predators who make us complacent, routinary, and egomaniacal. And he continues to ask him, but how can they do this, Don Juan? I mean, how is it possible? Do they whisper all of that in our ears while we sleep or something? He says, no, they don't need to do it that way. That's idiotic. They are infinitely more efficient and organized than that, he said. In order to keep us obedient and meek and weak, the predators engage themselves in a stupendous maneuver. Stupendous, of course, from the point of view of a fighting strategist. A horrendous maneuver from the point of view of those who suffer it. They gave us their mind. Do you hear me? He said. The predators gave us their mind, which becomes our mind. The predator's mind is baroque, contradictory, morose, filled with the fear of being discovered any minute now. And he's kind of referencing there this idea of the R complex of the brain, the reptilian brain. And this is just, it's very interesting. He goes on and on and on. He's talking about how there is basically a predatory race or predatory consciousness. If you think about what the Gnostics were trying to say about what they call the archons or an archontic force, an archon in Greek, I believe, means ruler. You know, they talk about these, but this is something that, of course, is cosmic in nature. It's an aberration. It's something that it has come here and defiled the true, innocent, free state of the living organisms on this planet. They came here for their own interest. They came here for resources. They came here for energy as well. And energy comes in many forms. And of course, human beings emit an incredible amount of energy, which could be somehow advantageous to other types of consciousness. Who knows, right? Other types of life forms. And so the Gnostics talk about this as like a mind parasite, as something that corrupts the mind, something that is, it's like a pathogen that has come in, right? And of course, we've seen the evidence or we've heard the stories of physical beings interacting with human beings, you know, of different varieties. But I think there's an overarching consciousness, a mindset, an energy field in a way that is projecting this, and that can be expressed through physical life forms as well as dimensional life forms, as well as life forms on this planet. So we see, as what he's saying there, which is just something interesting. Could it be that in some way we've been tampered with, we've been, altered in a way where we were more susceptible to control and guidance and the need. Look at the need that humans as a whole have for a parental type figure. Like, we fail to be able to evolve into full adulthood. It's extremely difficult to get to that point mentally. Why? Why isn't it not easier? Why is it not integrated? And of course, there's environmental things to that. There's been manipulations taking place on other levels as well, on behalf of other fellow human beings that have tried to control this planet. But where did this originate? Where did this originate? Did it originate in some way with these discussions of something else or someone else? I mean, in religion, people talk about angels and demons, don't they? What does that mean, angels and demons? I'm speaking English to you right now using the word angels and demons. What does that mean? What does that mean? It means something, doesn't it? But it's a description of something. And then, you know, the Arabs, they talk about the jinn. The Gnostics talk about the archons. The Toltecs talk about the flyers. The Zulus talk about the, well, like reptilians, and they talk about, trying to remember the name that they give it. But anyways, all these cultures have their own name for either these beings specifically that come from the depths of the cosmos, as they say, and they somehow interacted, they came here, and they interrupted our process of possibly natural evolution. And another quote from Carlos Castaneda is that human beings are on a journey of awareness which has been momentarily interrupted by extraneous forces. So that's just interesting to me. And it's interesting to think about that we may have something else happening here. And it's big. And it involves us. It involves all life on the planet. It involves the planet as a resource. And there may be a battle of good and evil, quote unquote, taking place between those who might be in some way defenders of this area of the solar system and those who may be aggressors. Sounds crazy, but hey, think about it. It's not really that crazy. And there could be, who knows, maybe there's even some kind of a galactic UN. Who knows, guys? Who knows? But I don't think we're alone. I think there could be multiple things taking place, and it's important that we at least look at these things, ask these questions, and contemplate them for ourselves. That's all I got for you tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Join me again next week. Happy to be with you tonight, and I wish you all the best. Talk soon.